She's always been the type of person that just says things and she just speaks her mind. I guess that has a little bit to do with not having a formal education.
Hello, everybody, guys. Welcome to episode 6 of The Body Serve. It's been a little while.
Yeah, we took a small hiatus. Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, not quite sure why. I guess life just happened.
Yeah, you know, like, we were really busy. We're really important. So sometimes we just don't get around to it.
Well, we're back. So quite a bit happened since we've been gone.
Surprisingly.
And the thing that was probably of most interest to us was the announcement that Sasha, Big Sasha, has decided to work with Vika now. He's left Serena's camp.
Yeah, I think a lot of you, myself included, woke up to this series of tweets between Serena and Sasha, and then Victoria Azarenka chimed in, and I was like, what is going on? How did this happen so fast?
And why is it so cordial? You know, it was also adult of everybody.
Yeah. So the bare bones of the story is that Sasha, who's been with Serena for, 8 years as her hitting partner, they've decided to part ways. We don't know exactly why. And he has confirmed that he's going to be working with Azarenka. So
the seeds of this were probably sown sometime in the off season. We don't really know what the exact timetable of it was. But Serena showed up in Australia for the Australian Open without Sasha as her regular hitting partner. The story was that Sasha was injured. We saw him online doing commentary for the tournament. And there was a lot of speculation then if everything was okay. They both kind of squashed rumors that there was something amiss. Now we get this news.
Yeah, and you know, Serena has said in the past that Sasha is the most important person on her team aside from her parents. You know, like, she thinks of him as a brother. So I don't know. It doesn't, at least by what they're putting out in the public, it doesn't seem like there was a huge falling out, you know? It all seems very friendly. But it's sad for Serena fans.
A lot of Serena fans were in mourning.
Some still people are in mourning. Apoplectic.
Yeah.
I mean...
The world had ended.
And, it's sad, and it was obviously a very illustrious partnership. And during those periods where she didn't really have a coach, Sasha kind of filled in as a coach.
And as fans, we bought into their friendship as well. You know, it added a stroke of color to the tennis sometimes. Seeing them post things behind the scenes on Instagram, Twitter, what have you. It was fun to follow. They were a fun duo.
Yeah. Now, not to incite rumors or anything.
Oh, yeah?
But I just read a USA Today piece from a few years ago, actually, where Sasha was saying, you know, sometimes Serena can be so mean on court, and we all know this to be true, that, you know, she'll be particularly cruel to him during their sessions, and he's, you know, thought about walking out a few times. And I can see that. And I can sympathize with both, because I actually feel like I've been cruel to people.
Have
like
you?
Serena.
Have you?
You know, so I get it. And I get why Sasha would want to leave.
You've been cruel. Maybe you're selling yourself a bit short there. Do you want to expand a little bit on that?
No, not at all. I don't know these people.
Sasha showing up now with Vika kind of adds a new layer to her resurgence. Don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know if I want to call it a resurgence yet.
She's playing really well. She had a good result in Australia, and she backed that up with a final in Doha.
Yeah.
Granted, some people were adding a bit of a caveat to her performance by saying that, you know, this is a tournament that she's traditionally done well at, and so maybe it's more to do with the familiarity of the venue and the courts that made her play so well. But she had some really good wins, including a comeback win against Venus.
Yeah.
In the semifinals.
True. I guess I'm just not ready to love Azarenka right now.
Why?
You know, she and I thought we had turned that corner. We've had many peaks and valleys in our relationship. so this is a valley. You know, I like her, and I like that she embraces her weirdness. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's just a little too soon.
Well, she had gone through that much talked about coaching switch, where Bouchard purportedly stole her coach in the middle of the night. And so she...
It was, guys, it was like when Taylor Swift supposedly stole Katy Perry's dancers. Oh, no, it was the other way around.
You gotta get your story straight here.
And then Katy Perry called Taylor the Regina George of pop music. Mm-mm. So y'all better brush up on your mean girls.
You're showing your age.
Excuse me? Mean Girls is very hip with young people on Tumblr, I've heard.
It's universal, you know? I'm told.
Even though the movie is 11 years old.
You were just a wee lad at the time. So she's with Wim Fassett now, and their first tournament together, she reaches the final of Doha.
Yeah.
So,
Kim Clijsters' former coach, Simona's former coach. Mm-hmm. Oh, but let's get back to me.
Okay.
So when we were talking about Serena... you know, our last episode was about Indian Wells, and both Jonathan and I were tweeting a lot about it. And I took a chance and tweeted at Serena Williams, suspecting nothing would ever come of it.
Yes.
And so 3 weeks later, you know, I get this notification.
Wait, set the tone. We were both at work, and I'd gone next door to have a drink with a friend at the bar. I was waiting on you to come join us, and you show up with this... radiance, this glow surrounding you, and you're like, Serena Williams just tweeted me, and you like just drop mic'd your phone on the table.
My phone has a case, luckily. But yeah, you know, you can all look it up on my Twitter. But she actually, you know, an intern or whoever, or maybe Serena, replied to the tweet and said, from me to you. And then it had this little message about, you know, thanking her fans for the support about Indian Wells. It was extremely exciting. I'm not going to lie. I don't even care who sent it or...
Well, you know that one of the people we follow on Twitter, Tennis Matador, he was quick to point out to you that this was more probably more like a form letter that she was sending out to a bunch of people.
And I was quick.
You were also very quick.
I was quick to shut that down.
Yes. There was absolutely no need to rain on that parade.
There was no hard feelings.
Like, is Serena tweeting him? I'd like to know.
There are no hard feelings. But I will say I went on Serena's page right after that because I wanted to be sure. And there were only like similar messages to about 8 other people. So guess what?
You are 1 of 8.
So, you know, this is... like my first brush with fame, and I'm going to enjoy it.
We mentioned that Azarenka beat Venus in the semifinals of Doha, and that was another really good result for Venus. Mm-hmm. She played a string of 3-set matches, couldn't quite close Azarenka out in what was a very high-quality match. Like, you'll almost never see Venus play a match like that with those kinds of statistics outside of Wimbledon.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so she's, as we speak, number 6 in the road to Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
Still early going yet, but the positives keep coming.
Yeah, you know, she had a lot to defend winning Dubai last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she didn't do badly, but it was a bit of a disappointment. But, playing well in Doha was a good good boost to the rankings race, I think.
She had a final to defend in Auckland. She won that tournament. Mm-hmm. She made the quarterfinals in Australia. And now she's made the semifinals in Doha. And still, she's only managed to rise, I think, maybe 2 spots in the rankings from her year-end spot at the end of 2014.
Well, she did bounce up to number 11 and then bounce back.
She did
back.
Briefly, yeah. But there is a very... small number of points separating her between the top 10 right now. Mm-hmm. So if she can somehow, you know, string together a few more performances like this, maybe win a few rounds at the French Open. Mm-hmm. Get a fourth round quarterfinal. You know, the top 10 is really in her future sometime soon.
Hopefully. I agree. And she's beating top 10 players.
She beat Radwanska for the second time on the year in an almost similar scoreline to the fourth round in Australia.
Yeah, which is no easy feat for Venus.
One of the funnier moments that we witnessed was the exchange with Caroline and Vika with the chair umpire a couple of weeks ago. Do you want to set the stage for that one?
Yeah, it was very strange. So Caroline hit a serve. She had a second serve that hit the net and then bounced out on the other side of the net.
To the right-hand side of the
right
tee.
So wide, yes. But on the right side. So
it wasn't even like it was a fast let either. It just plopped itself just like, down, clearly out.
It piddled over the net out. So there was no call. It was called a let, second serve. And the Victoria decided to challenge it,
she
obviously.
She got turned up.
But the challenge system wasn't working. So she got real turned.
Mm-hmm.
Which, honestly, this is a premier WTA tournament. And the challenge system isn't working. Okay.
And it's like,
you get mad.
This is like a Serena at the US Open kind of call. Too, you know?
It's egregious.
Egregious.
And so, you know, Victoria's getting into it. The umpire decides he wants to call the WTA referee. Strangely didn't want to make a decision himself, which I thought was bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Just nip it in the bud. And then Caroline comes crawling in and says, I want a first serve. It's been so long. Caroline, who just hit a double fault, mind you, she wants a first serve.
Which, if the ball weren't so clearly out, she'd have been totally within her rights. And technically, I guess she still was.
Mm.
But the nerve.
I know.
To be then calling for a first serve when she must have known that the ball was out.
Oh, no, she knew. But, I mean, she was within her rights to ask.
Yes.
But it was like a little, I mean.
And did you see the hands akimbo look that Vika gave her?
Oh, my God. You can tell these to our friends.
Yeah, because it wasn't mean-spirited.
Right, but it was this whole hullabaloo.
Yes.
And Caroline even got a few choice words on live TV, you know? She told the referee, I don't give a shit. I love when the commentators apologize for the bad words, too. Oops, sorry, our live cameras picked that up.
As if that's the worst thing people would have ever heard,
you know?
But those two have had a couple of run-ins early on in the season. Like they had that second round match in Australia. Very unfortunate. And they met early again in this match where they had this incident.
Yeah, and, you know, Azarenka clearly has Caroline's number.
Yeah, you'd have to say so at this point.
I mean, Azarenka is on the comeback trail, and Wozniacki is, you know, firmly a top 10 player at this point.
Yeah.
And Azarenka can just, like, wallop her.
Yeah, these are matches she should be winning on paper, you know? Given their positions currently.
But at least challenging, you know, getting to 7-5, 7-6 sets.
Yeah, these shouldn't be whimper matches for Caroline.
Because you have to push Azarenka into making errors because she has, like, bouts of being erratic still, you know? Especially that now that she's kind of playing herself into form again.
The other bit of news that we found out was that Miss Martina Hingis is no longer partnering with Flavia Panetto. They've had a fairly successful go of it since they started playing together last year. And she's going to be playing with Sania Mirza now.
I actually didn't even know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
I told you that yesterday.
I'm really unprepared, sorry.
Yet another instance where you don't listen to me.
Oh.
Dirty laundry. I mean, this is a tennis power couple right now in doubles.
Mm-hmm.
Mirza's been one of the top-ranked players for a long time now on the double circuit. And Hingis seems really committed to staying a while. And at the top.
So here. Let's hope they unseat my favorite Sarah Errani.
But you do like Vinci.
I'm indifferent to Vinci, to be quite honest. You know, I am part Italian. I have a lot of pride for Italy. and Italian players, and there's just a crop of Italian players I cannot stand at this point. I actively root against them.
Fabio, obvious reasons.
I used to love Flavia, but you are the company you keep. I can no longer support her because she's with Fabio. And Sarah Errani, who celebrates like the Incredible Hulk. She could beat the 2,000th ranked player in the world, or she could defeat an opponent who retired, which recently happened, and she celebrates like she just won Wimbledon. It's just...
uncouth.
It's not professional, you know?
You know how I feel about
that. I don't like her.
She endeared herself to me forever with her little performance after beating Venus at the US Open last year. So there's nothing more that needs to be said in my part. There have been a slew of tournaments all over the globe since the Australian Open. And we've had quite a few interesting winners. David Ferrer has won two tournaments, back-to-back, no less. And Rafa won his first tournament in 9 months. Which is a very misleading headline that we saw all over the place. Because much of that time he was out due to injury, right?
Right.
So if Rafa were playing healthily for 9 months, that would not have been the case.
Right. But we've also seen this many times in his career, even in his good years, where he goes many months without a title, you know, so it's not that alarming. Yeah, and you know, it's great that he won a title. Buenos Aires, the draw wasn't exactly world class.
No.
But, you know, Rafa is a confidence player. He needs to sort of play into form on clay, at least these past few years, you know. And he seems like he still suffers from so much insecurity.
Yeah.
And he always has. You know, so he needs to get some good matches, develop a rhythm before he kind of believes that he can win.
Well, more than anything for me, I think it has to do with fitness level, oddly enough. I think he needs to trust his fitness as well.
Yeah.
I don't think he's at the point where he feels that he can play 4 or 5 hours and then come back tomorrow, which is where he needs to be mentally
right.
to be able to win these big tournaments. And so
especially on clay.
Yeah. Because that's his trump card, right? Mm. He knows that if he has to play 5 sets against anybody in clay, he backs himself and we back him almost every time.
Right.
Even against the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's probably no greater evidence of that than the French Open final last year against Djokovic.
Right.
You know, Djokovic looked completely spent mentally, physically against him, and that was just a 4-set match.
Mm-hmm.
So he looks to be on his way. It'll be interesting coming up with the hard court tournaments in between the clay swing yet again to see how he performs there and then how that then translates back to clay.
This is such an odd stretch of the calendar.
It really is.
You know, because you have people playing on clay, on hard court.
Indoor.
Acapulco switched to hard court for the first time this year. So it's just
And then you have people playing this weekend Davis Cup to then fly back to the States to play Indian Wells. And then if you're going to play all three, then you go to Miami the next week.
Right.
And Indian Wells, Miami are two of the biggest tournaments outside of the majors, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I can't really muster up a lot of outrage at the top players not wanting to play Davis Cup.
No.
And, you know, especially Federer and Wawrinka. They won last year. You knew they weren't going to play this year.
Like, why should they put themselves through that, you know?
You know, Wawrinka has been keeping them in the world group for how many years? If anyone deserves a break from Davis Cup, it's him. And Roger finally got that on his resume. It was obviously important to him to kind of... You know, Roger really cares about his CV. Yeah. He always has, his numbers.
Should he ever have to show up to that job interview?
Right. I think he would acquit himself very well. But he
I think
cares.
He'd be one of those players who do very well about talking up his accomplishments.
Yeah, he's really never had a problem with that.
No.
You know, I know, you know, there are a lot of places in the world where Davis Cup is a really huge deal.
I was just on Twitter just now and I saw people tweeting about the lineups to go see Djokovic practice for the Serbian tie. And it's crazy. Like, it's that kind of fervor for Davis Cup tennis is not something that we'll ever really be able to understand.
Right.
You know?
So I think someone like me from the U.S., like, if you're not into tennis, you may not even know what Davis Cup is. You know, tennis is so under the radar in the U.S. But if you're from a country like Serbia or Czech Republic, these things are a huge deal. You know, and so there's different pressures on players from those countries.
Ultimately, though, the Davis Cup this weekend really just shows you how crammed the tennis calendar is.
Yeah.
You know, they got a month off in December. The men, at least. The women got a couple extra weeks, I think. But it's been nonstop ever since. You know, I'm thinking of players, if you want to... Say, for example, you're Federer and you want to maybe cut back a few tournaments each year as you get older to preserve yourself throughout the course of the year for the big events. It's tough to manage it. I don't know how these players do it. If you want to keep your ranking up, if you want to keep making that money, you know, so much money is thrown at these players for appearance fees for some of the smaller tournaments. Do you decide to forego that money?
Right.
You know, to preserve your career by another 6 months to a year. You know, it's crazy how much they have to play.
I know. You know, on the men's tour especially, there are nine Masters events, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's four Grand Slams. And then someone like Federer has his favorite smaller tournaments.
He has Basel.
He'll always play Basel. He'll always play Halle.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
He has, you know, the smaller tournaments that he's loyal to. So where do you cut? You know, if you want to pare down your schedule.
Where do you take a mid-year vacation with the family?
Exactly.
You know?
He's got four kids now, you know? He obviously loves what he does, but, you know, a 33-year-old needs a break.
Yeah. So speaking of Federer, he beat Novak in the Dubai final.
He did. That was...
Pretty matter-of-factly, too.
Yeah, it was a really clean match from him. You know, this is like late period Federer aggression, right? He was at the net a lot. His serve is still working beautifully. And that's, you know, that has always made him so dangerous. And I think it's a really underrated part of his game. He may not serve the fastest, but, you know, he's just exceeded 9,000 aces for his career, which very few players have done.
It may be underrated for those who aren't in the know. I feel like most people who keep up with tennis have some understanding of how great his serve is.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, it's... I think, and especially me being someone who, you know, rooted against him in many matches, many important matches.
I was right there with you for most of those.
His serve seems particularly daunting.
Yeah. You
know, it can really get him out of trouble. If he's not hitting aces, there's a lot of unreturnables.
It's similar to Sampras in that regard, and the feeling of watching him serve like that was similar to my feeling watching Sampras serve like that against Agassi.
Yes.
Who was my favorite growing up.
Because,
but their serves are different. I feel Federer has a much better serve.
Really?
Well, in terms of having a more well-rounded serve. Sampras' serve was a lot bigger, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when it's placed as well as he could, it was unreturnable. But in terms of having a more all-round serve, I feel that Federer has more weapons with it.
Okay.
But back to the match.
Yeah. He saved all seven break points that he faced, which is, you know, it's not a good stat for Djokovic at all.
No.
You know, and he... I don't really think this is a bellwether for the rest of his season, you know, but I was surprised that he...
We've been rope-a-doped by that before, yes, you know?
Exactly. That's why I'm not buying...
We've seen Djokovic throw in these stretches, albeit small stretches, of like, what was going on with that kind of moments, you know?
Yeah, just like a clunker.
Yeah, and then he finds his way back. So I don't really put a whole lot of stock into that. That's the type of result that you just, if you're a Federer fan, you take and you run with it, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like every day there's some more news coming out of the tennis world. We learned that Petra Kvitova withdrew from Indian Wells.
Mm-hmm.
And the reasoning, bizarrely, was that she's too exhausted to play. Did I misread that?
No,
that was the general gist of it, right?
She did cite exhaustion. Which is really troubling, you know? we obviously don't know what's going on, mm-hmm. but it's very strange to see a top five player on either tour pull out for exhaustion, you know?
And she hasn't had many deep runs this year at all.
Right. So it's not like she's playing a crazy amount of matches. No.
A lot of the talk at the start of the year was how she's going to dominate this season, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just disheartening to see it, her year be derailed.
Yeah, I would say to be prudent, never pick Petra to dominate ever, but savor her brilliant play
yes.
at certain tournaments, yeah. you know?
Well, which is why we had some major side eye when we read that whole bit at the Australian Open where the press room, I think this came via Courtney Nguyen, talking about how if there were one player to win a Grand Slam this year on the women's side, it would be Petra. I guess outside of Serena, right?
Right.
And we were both like,
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to poo-poo it now, yeah, but I shall remind you that we poo-pooed it then, too.
Yes, we did. You can check the archives.
Check the receipts.
Dropping some Whitney Houston references.
You know, so unfortunately, Petra is not playing, so get better soon, Petra. But someone who is playing, or so he says, is Juan Martín Del Potro. Mm-hmm. I was surprised to hear that.
Yeah. He withdrew from Australia with having to have another wrist surgery. Mm-hmm. And this is a really quick recovery. Apparently, it's right. gone better than they expected. They did say it was a minor surgery when he had it.
Yeah, he flew straight to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, like right from Australia.
Like, if you're looking at somebody's location, like where in the world are they? And Del Potro is in Australia for the tennis tournament, and the next day he's in Minnesota. There's only one reason he's there.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not for the Mall of America.
No.
And someone else who's coming back, Laura Robson was given a wild card into qualifying, which is strange. But I'm surprised it wasn't a wild card into the actual main draw. But Nicole Vidasova was actually given a main draw wild card.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In Miami. Not in Indian Wells.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
She reached the main draw of, where was she this week? Monterey, right?
Yeah, who can keep track?
So she played Ivanovic. She made it through qualifying, yes, played Ivanovic.
In the first round.
And she lost. We made it to a 7-6 set, so that's a good result for her.
Mm-hmm.
But back to Del Potro. He is, I would say bar none, the most beloved tennis player on my Twitter feed. Outside of having like somebody that you stand for all the time, mm-hmm. you know, like a Federer or Roger. Like a Federer or Nadal.
Ah.
He seems to cut across these fandoms. He intersects with a lot of fandoms, you know, like people. He's just a very well-liked guy, you know?
Yes. He inspires a lot of like
cuddly feelings.
Cuddly teddy bear, yes. You know. People just want to hug him because he's been through so much.
Yeah.
There's serious drama with him and Juan Monaco and the Argentinian Davis Cup team, though. Apparently they don't love him as much as everyone else.
Well, he's been very outspoken against the whole expectations from the Argentinian Federation and Davis Cup, right? But that's a whole drama I don't need to be getting into right
Honestly,
now.
Honestly, the drama of Argentine sport is like, we cannot wade into that.
No.
Because we don't
have the time. And so all eyes this week, because Indian Wells is coming up. And I have to say, I'm insanely jealous. Almost, I feel like everybody in my Twitter timeline is going to Indian Wells this week. And
I know.
It was something that we talked about going to. And in retrospect, it's something that we could have probably swung, but you had no desire to go.
How short-sighted am I? I said, well, Serena and Venus never play it, so why would I go?
Yep. Why would he go? He has no desire to ever go.
Oh my God.
I even like looked up all these different flight scenarios and was like, you know, we can make this work. It's like, nope, nope, not going.
Yeah.
So here I am suffering. Don't have any pity on him.
How was I to know that this was the year Serena would go back?
But she is going back, and that's going to be something everybody's going to be watching.
Mm-hmm.
easily the biggest story of the tournament, right?
Yeah, probably the biggest story of the tournament since she decided never to come back. If you think about it.
I don't think you've given this tournament credit, enough credit for how prestigious it is.
Of course. I wouldn't deny that.
Okay.
Rafa's won it twice. No, I'll just say that the women's tournament has been severely weakened because Venus and Serena don't play it.
Yeah. There's no getting around that.
Yeah.
I'm really interested to see. I'm sure the reception is going to be great in terms of the fans.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if there are going to be a few, I'm going to use a mild word and say haters. They're
an apolitical word.
Yeah, there are other words that I'm sure you could substitute for that. They're a little bit stronger. Who might want to come and start some trouble?
I don't know.
I mean, not, I don't want to say trouble, mm-hmm. but at least, you know, like the boos here or there make a point of like showing displeasure, give her a hard time, you know? Possibly. I'm just wondering how much of a universal thing it's going to be that she's going to have a warm reception, mm-hmm. you know?
I think security will be tight mm-hmm. and people will be weeded out. You know, I don't think they'll hesitate to eject people. No, but
we've been to tennis tournaments and we've heard about how lax security is at tennis tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
The access that fans have to players is unprecedented, really. You know, that being said, I don't know what the layout of the tournament is. I'm sure they can cart her in and out in back ways and tunnels.
Oh, yeah.
That.
Yeah. No, I think any dissent will be properly squashed. You know, the tournament is probably really cognizant of the bad press that would mm-hmm. come for that, and that they're just not going to deal with it.
You're expecting a Serena win?
I don't know. I wouldn't say expecting. I wouldn't be surprised if she won, and it would be an amazing story. But I don't, honestly, I'm not even that invested in whether or not she wins. I just think it's an exciting, what's the word? It's a great chapter in her career mm-hmm. to watch this happen.
It would still be very unfortunate if she lost her first match, though.
And unlikely.
Yes.
But yes, very yes. unfortunate.
No, but you're making it seem like...
I don't know why you have to be such a Debbie Downer.
I'm not being a Debbie Downer, but you're making it seem like, oh, it's just so wonderful that she's here. You know, that's all I want. Like I
hear you.
Okay.
I think winning the tournament would be an important statement, too.
Just please, no losses to Cornet.
Yeah.
Early in the week. Rina's army will not be able to stomach that.
I mean, Serena's fans are already a really emotional bunch.
Yes.
And so I fear for everyone's mental health if something like that were to happen.
That's a common thing. That's a common theme that we talk about all the time from having a presence on Twitter now. You know, like, we wonder how, like, if these people are emotionally stable. Like some of these Twitter friends, you know?
Okay. I watched this video of... It was just a Serena fan showing Victoria Azarenka's tweets to Sasha, and he was unfollowing her, and then he decided to block her because... he was, like, narrating the whole mm-hmm. thing. And he's... Can I say this? I don't know if I can swear on this.
Our mothers listen to this.
Oh. Well, they swear. We won't tell. But he's like, Vika, I don't F with you anymore.
Oh.
I can't.
That's not too bad.
No, it was pretty good, though. I'm like, calm down. Just turn down. You don't need to block her.
Like, Serena's clearly fine with it. Vika's clearly fine with it. Sasha's happy. You just need to deal with it, you know?
Yeah, just... Serena fans, I say this out of love. Just turn down. Just calm yourselves. I had to.
Ooh, the other thing we wanted to talk about. Borna Koric. Mm. And his easy win against Andy Murray.
Mm-hmm.
It seems he was playing more like Roger Federer
apparently,
than Andy Murray apparently. That day.
If you'll recall Mr. Koric's arrogant comments about when he plays badly, he plays like Andy Murray.
Yeah, well, I think that was a little bit misunderstood. think he kind of backtracked from it and explained it a little bit after, but it still helps to make this situation fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Fun for whom?
It's hilarious.
Yes, because he just, like, kind of spanked Andy Murray.
Yeah, I mean...
It wasn't close.
With tennis, you know, played year-round and in all different time zones, every day I wake up, I check my app, and I'm looking at scores that I've missed while I'm sleeping, right? And that day I woke up, and I saw that score, and I had such a good laugh, you know?
I don't... You know, I'm having so much trouble getting behind... the youngins, and that's just part of me. That's, you know, I'm
especially
just,
as you get older,
I'm mistrustful of new people. And I always have been.
Hey, I'm the immigrant here.
Not in that way. I'm very conservative in that way, you know. I respect kind of a longevity.
Yeah.
Like venerated players.
And we're in an era where those venerated players are still around and doing great, you know?
Yeah.
And it's also a time where young people don't have the success that they did before in tennis.
Right.
So, I mean, it is jarring. He's 18. That's a really eye-opening result, you know?
Yeah, but to be honest, I'm so uninterested in the teenagers. Even the low 20s. Like, I don't care about you until you turn, like, 24.
The only young player that I really care about at this point is Team. Dominic Thiem. And that's tempered by his friendship with Gulbis. I'm sorry for all the Gulbis fans out there. He has a huge following, Ernest Gulbis. But I'm kind of side-eye at that friendship, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. We're actually going to be following this one up with an episode very shortly on tennis commentary, talking about some of the things that we really dislike, taking a look at some of the many conflicts of interest with so many of the tennis commentators, not the least of which is Justin Gimelstob, who will be your main target.
Whipping boy.
Deservedly so. And so please join us for our next episode. That one's definitely something to look forward to. And if we can, we'd love for you to find us on iTunes. Review the podcast. Tell us what you think. Shoot us a line on Twitter. Any way you can find us, let us know what you think. You can find us on Podbean, iTunes. On Twitter, you can find us at The Body Serve. I'm Jonathan. My Twitter handle is at SportsScribeCA.
And I'm James. And I'm at ElliotJMR.
Two L's, two T's. All right. Till next time.